אתם מקשיבים לטייפ רדיו. השם שלי הוא עודד עזר. עכשיו אנחנו מדברים.
Listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the ATYPI conference in Dublin, Ireland. It's September 2010, and our guest is Oded Azer. Welcome.
Hello.
Our first question is, are you religious?
Not at all. I mean, I have religious roots. My grandfather was religious. My father is half religious, I can say. I'm not religious at all, but in a cultural sense, I'm very aware of the Jewish religion and my roots.
Can you divide the religion from culture?
Not really, you're right. I can't really divide that, but when it comes to the roots of Hebrew typography and Hebrew letters, I'm very much interested in religion. But I don't practice. I'm pretty much secular. So you say secular, right?
Yeah.
So in my everyday life, I don't obey the religious rules and things like that, although my wife does some of it. So in a way, the thing that connects me to religion or to my roots is typography. I can tell that.
And do you have rituals?
Me? I mean, personally?
Or also personally, but also in your work?
In what sense?
Well, I don't know. Is there like some circumstances you create in order to do your experimentations or your...
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, between me and myself, I don't have rituals, but I'm inventing some kind of rituals. It was, I think, 2 years ago, I was in Lourdes, you say?
Lourdes, in
south of France,
mm-hmm.
And I was in a typographic conference, and the theme of the conference was secrets. And for this particular conference, I invented a typographic religion, and I made myself kind of priest, typographic priest, and I invented some kind of dance, typographic dance that my believers are dancing, and of course everything was just in my head. But I was really, really surprised when I finished my talk and one of the students came to me saying, I would like to be your first believer. So actually now I have a typographic church and I have one believer.
Great. I mean, you need just only about 10 more and then that's it.
Exactly.
What is your first typographic memory as a kid?
My first typographic memory is while being in a car with my father and he's driving in the streets of Ramat Gan, where I grew up when I was a little kid. I think I was something like 7 years old. And I remember I used to read the signs while he was driving. And I think I was driving him mad because of that. But the thing was that as a young kid, I understood that there is something inside those signs that is really special. And I wanted to kind of taste the taste of the signs, so I just read it aloud. But what I really wanted to do is to maybe to form it, to touch it, to do something with it. Of course, I can tell it now. I didn't know what I'm doing when I was a kid. But if you ask what is my first memory, that was one of the first. Later on, when I was in high school, I used to print high school newspapers. And I used to draw all the letters by hand myself. And sometimes I publish those newspapers only to draw the type. So in a way, that was the start of my growing love to letters. Later on, I went on to study at the Bezalel Academy of art and design in Jerusalem. And of course, that was the start of my professional education.
And your father, did he appreciate what you were doing, or?
I think he likes what I'm doing. I hope so.
Was there any family member that was an influence to your work, or?
Well, not directly, but okay. I can say that being the son of my mother, who's a painter, I'm sure that some of the principles of art and also design came from there. So in a way, I grew up in such an environment that my mother painted, and my father was really like a serious reading guy, you know. So in a way, it is like a mixture of art and being serious about something, serious about details, serious about methods and methodologies.
And what were your inspiration in those days when you were in the art academy? What people inspired you then?
When I was in art academy, I was inspired by, especially by, let's say, the early Studio Dunbar. I really remember the mid-80s posters that they did. Also by Israeli graphic designer David Taktakover, who's a very much political designer. Like, he does political posters and things like that. And also Alain Le Carnac. Mm-hmm. So it's like, basically, I was influenced by poster designers, if I can say it like that. Later on, I became more aware of typographic designers. But these were the first. Maybe also Philippe Papelois, the early works of him, and Barbara Kruger. But that was like almost 15 years ago. So it changed since then.
We read that you served in the military, and that was an influence in your creativity. And I was just curious.
Did I say that?
Yeah, we read that. And I'm just curious. I don't know. Did you say that?
Well, I can tell you that that was the worst time of my life, being mm-hmm. in the military, in the army. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was the opposite of a good soldier. But I had kind of luck. It's ironic, but I was wounded when I was in the army. And that made my profile go down. So I had to do something other than to fight. It was like, and I asked, I wasn't a designer then. It was mm-hmm. before my studies. And I used to be a guitar player. But I had this idea to become a designer. I didn't know exactly what does it mean.
Did you have a formal training in music?
Yes, during my high school, I had formal training in music, and I played classical guitar, and I had a rock band and things.
Do you
like
still
that.
Play?
Oh no, no, okay. I quit that. I'm too lazy to do both design and music. So the thing was in the army that I had to find some other job for myself. So I asked to become a designer. Actually, I became a stage designer in the army. And I don't know if you know, but in the Israeli army, there are rock bands or rock groups like to entertain the soldiers. So I became the stage designer for these shows. And that was a nice experience. And I think that was the first time when I became aware to questions of design. Of course, I was very naive. I didn't know anything about graphic design, typography, especially typography. I didn't know anything about that, but it was kind of a naive start.
Do you have photographs of that work?
Oh, hopefully not. No. No, I don't think so.
But it sort of triggered the idea, the concept of you being
a designer
in a creative or a design profession and making that your living?
Absolutely. Right. Because until then, I didn't know what design is, and I didn't see myself as somebody that can be a designer one day.
We've read like in several articles also like the deliberate division you make between your studio work for clients and your experimentations.
Yeah.
What made you decide that?
well, life. Actually, I'm very happy to tell you that in recent years, it kind of start to merge. These two strict areas, if I can say like that, start to merge. And the experimental stuff starts to influence the commercial stuff and vice versa. But in the first few years, it was a very, very hard to make a living out of experimental stuff because I was not known and nobody wanted to pay for experimental stuff. So I had to do commercial stuff. And since Israel is a very small country and the audience is very small, naturally, mm-hmm. the customers are really afraid of their losing money. So they don't let you do much non-mainstream stuff. So I had to make a decision, either to quit experimenting or either to be really, really poor. And I didn't want neither. Mm-hmm. So what I did, I kind of divided my day into a daytime and a nighttime. And in the daytime, I worked like hell to make money. And in the nighttime, I was the king in my studio. Nobody says anything. I have no deadlines. I have no clients. I can experiment just like a scientist that have no real responsibility, but only to examine some new ways of doing things.
So is it more the influence of the country you're in than
maybe
really
the size of the country?
Yeah. Would you consider to live somewhere else?
In recent years, I really think about spending some time in New York. I've been, for the first time in my life, I've been to New York 2.5 years ago. It was for the opening of the Design and Elastic Mind exhibition in the MoMA. And it was an amazing experience for me, meeting all these great people like Paula Antonelli. And I met Stefan Zagmeister over there and things like that. So for me, it was like coming home in a way. And it was really strange because I never been there before. So, yes, I would like to try some other places for a bit.
And why specific New York?
I felt good there. That's all.
I can imagine that being, even if you've never been there, you know the city because you've seen it in television series.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen it in movies.
Yeah.
Everything looks really familiar. Yes. Although you may never been there, you really feel like, oh, I know this. You know, it sort of feels... Like you like your home in a way, because it is, because you've seen it, you bring it into your home on DVD and the television.
But I must say that the experience of being there physically is completely different. And, well, I've been there only 1 week, so I cannot say anything more than that.
And in what way can you sort of describe the influence of the political situation? Because it's kind of an explosive, like for the history of Israel, is sort of embedded in... explosive violence and really, in what way has it affected?
I was afraid that you were.
I can imagine it be it affecting you like personally. Like, just of course, it affects everybody personally living in that area.
Well, I'm not really a political person. Actually, I'm the opposite of that. I have my thoughts about this situation, but in my work, in my typographic work, I do the opposite. I do two things. One is I go inside and not outside. I go inside me in order to understand what is really important and what is really universal. Actually, I see my work as a universal work of an Israeli person. Of course, my background is influencing me, but I don't know to tell you how. I just can tell you that in a way, I think that my Jewishness is more important to my typographic work than my Israeli background. I really, really love my country, but I'm not into politics while working. So I leave it to other people. I leave it to politicians and people that are better than me in these kind of things.
And you also mentioned that now it comes closer together, the commercial and non-commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Is that because your clients are more aware of your other work? Or
absolutely.
Yeah?
I'm very, very happy and I feel fortunate about the fact that in recent years, clients keep calling me, saying something like, we want to hire you, we want this and that, but you do whatever you like. We want your head. Yeah. We don't want to interfere, mm-hmm. you know, your creation. And that really, that flatters me. And I feel like I have just good luck. So, and really, I'm thankful to other people because they pay now. And they pay for my way of doing things that I've developed during the years. And I'm really thankful to this situation. Really, I never get used to that. It's like I say, oh, and this client wants me to do whatever I like. Wow. And the other one, and this is wonderful. Of course, I feel more responsible now because they trust me. And if I came to the point where they trust me, that means I cannot let them down. So in a way, this is, I see that as the as entering to the, how can I explain that? To the zone where I really want it to be, where I can express myself and together with that, help the client. And I try to do it better and better and to merge these two areas. I think that also I grew up in my attitude and in my knowledge. So I'm more able to do that now than I used to do like 10 years ago.
But also by growing up, do you think then sometimes you can miss playfulness?
Oh, no.
No?
I'm not growing up in this sense.
Okay.
I'm trying to remain as stupid as I was when I was younger, as naive as I was when I was younger. And, you know, if I can make my 3.5 years old child laugh, then I'm on the right track, you know. He's used to the fact that his father is going at home with a kind of a mohawk, you know, typographic mohawk. And he says, oh, daddy's a chicken now, you know, something like that. So I'm happy to tell you that in this sense, I don't think I will ever grow up. Only in the sense of my knowledge or of seeing the whole picture or something like that. But I'm trying not to feel important. I'm trying not to feel that I know something. And even in front of my students, I don't act as I know what typography is. I always say that I know what I know, but I'm all the time ready to learn. All the time, I'm happy to learn from other people what typography is all about. Because, you know, typography is a changing and evolving area. It's like nobody really knows where this profession goes to. So it's ridiculous, I think, to say that typography is this and this and that, instead of saying, let's see what typography can do for us.
Is that also the fascination with typography, that it's not really clear what it is?
Yes.
That you keep pursuing it and experimenting with it?
Yes.
And has your son taught you something lately that you haven't thought
He's
of?
He's very much into trains now.
Okay. Is that your next profession?
No, but I might do something with typography and trains. I don't know. It's like the whole thing is about merging disciplines and playing with what if. What if typography was this and that? And then you get some answers, some surprising answers. And if you're brave enough, you can do something with that. That's all. Sometimes I'm not very brave, so I shut it down, you know. But sometimes I feel really comfortable with experimenting, and then I can come up with something new.
And is there something you're afraid of?
Like what?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like being waking ridiculous?
Up, yeah, I don't know. Or waking up and not... What happens when you can't say what if? I don't know.
Okay, there are two phases to that. First, if you lose your muse, that's okay. I'm not afraid of that. Because if you did something once, you can do it again and again, mm-hmm. even if you have to take a break. So that's okay. I'm not afraid of that. And if you talk about being ridiculous with some new stupid answers for the question, what if typography was this and that? So I can answer very clear and loud that I hope to be ridiculous until the day I will die, because that means that I try something that nobody else did, and I have no intention to be cool or to be wise or to be smart in any way. And the only time when I feel that I've done something worthwhile is when I am really afraid of what will come out of what I'm doing. And then I know that something really good is happening.
And it's also like the outcome, what you describe now as of a certain experimentation of product, is that always the main thing, the main reason why you perceive that? I mean, I can imagine that you being researching or investigating things is enough for you, and you don't really, but do you always have to have an outcome, like I want to make an image or?
I think that we were born to make things. We were born to do things, and only after you make something that is visible or somebody can touch it or see it, sense it, only then you did something important. Important in the sense of doing something for the others, you know. So in a way, the outcome is the result and also not the end result of the process. Because, you know, when we study graphic design, we are used to think about our next poster as the thing. You know, you made the poster, you designed the poster, you printed the poster, and then you think that you ended with that. That is the brief. You finished. But what I try to do is not to think about the product as the end station. I think about the journey as the main task. And in between, there are stations. So I stop, and to stop means to design something maybe, and then I carry on. And that's okay, because what I designed is not full stop. It's just a beginning of something else. So in a way, this is similar to the methodology of a visual artist and not a designer. But this is very hard to achieve, and it took me like a few years to relax and to think like that. But it's really, it makes the whole thing really stronger. But because if you don't think about your next job as the job of your life, this is really releasing your thoughts. And then you can carry on and develop it furthermore in the next work that you do. And everything becomes so easy in a way, and without any fear. You don't fear anymore. It's just the joy of discovering things and the joy of failing. This is okay. To fail is part of the party, part of the game.
The biotypography, I mean, yeah. You've been sperm and type, like DNA modification and type.
Yeah.
What is the next level? What is the next step now?
Well, after I made the Typosperma, which was an absolutely invention of my mind, which I never had the chance to really do, because it deals with the human sperm mixed with typographic information that was implanted into the DNA. So of course, I don't have the budget to do it in the real life, but it was just like an idea that I threw inside the what we call culture. Mm-hmm. The next step was making the short film, Typembria, which was actually a homage to Herb Lubalin's mother and child logo. And that was really the first time that I made a film. And it shows an embryo that is actually an ampersand that one can think about when it comes out, it will be a creature in a way. So that was the last station, if I can put it like that, in the huge work of the biotypography idea. I don't know if I will make another project like that. Maybe yes, maybe not. Because I was very interested lately in what if typography will mix with social media applications or websites like Facebook and Twitter and Skype. So I was really interested in that, and I decided to design a poster that will be a non-design kind. I asked people to draw a letter, a single letter, and I just took a photo of each one and one of them together with their letter and composed a poster using these letters that I called Skype type. And that was really fun. And that was the first time that I ever did something like that. Going out of the room, because I usually work alone, and suddenly I had to work with like 80 people from around the world. Each one of them live in other country and have another, you know, other language. And it was such a great fun. It took me 3 days to complete this, and I was really happy and really exhausted after that. So I'm not hooked to the biotypography things. I'm just carry on. I'm searching for more areas to investigate, and my only aim is to find new ways of dealing with typography.
How would you like to be remembered?
I don't know. That's a tough question. I let you decide. I just want, you know, I hope I wouldn't need to be remembered now because I'm quite young, but I just wish I can carry on with my investigations and to surprise myself. Because if I surprise myself, that means I'm alive, you know, and I'm not professionally dead. Mm. So that's my wish.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It was a real pleasure.